From Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the local edition. I'm Jason Dolb. So glad you're here with me tonight. Coming up, Sullivan County has a new poet laureate. We will meet Kim Thai coming up to find out what her plans are for poetry in Sullivan County. And as Pennsylvania's budget deadline approaches, Governor Josh Shapiro is proposing incentives for data centers to be more environmentally friendly. Patricio Rubio checks in with Kate Wong Poo, government reporter for Spotlight PA. That's coming up in a moment. We start tonight with big news for the Delaware River in our listening area, because the Upper Delaware Council will be receiving $100,000 from New York State. The UDC helps coordinate management of the federally protected Upper Delaware Scenic and Recreational River, but its federal funding has remained largely unchanged since its creation in 1988. And if you've been around that long, you might have realized that nothing is as inexpensive as it was in 1988. So their federal funding has not adjusted for inflation. This $100,000 will be the first direct state funding for the organization in more than three decades. The Upper Delaware Council has long argued that New York and Pennsylvania never fulfilled the original funding commitments that were envisioned when the organization was created. To find out more, Tim Bruno spoke with Liam Mayo, editor of the River Reporter, live this morning on Radio Chatskill.
New York approved $100,000 in operational funding for the Upper Delaware Council. It was announced as kind of a co-package with the Friends of the Upper Delaware River, a separate organization that is a nonprofit that also sort of works on conserving the Upper Delaware River. And between them, they got $550,000, with the bulk of that going to Futter and this $100,000 allotment going to the Upper Delaware Council.
And why have they been seeking support for decades? Why has it been such a long-standing issue?
Throughout the years, it was just something that wasn't done in the beginning, and it was something where the arguments for it just never sort of worked until now. With inflation, sort of the original $300,000 that it's getting from the federal government is meaning less and less, and it conducted a financial study that indicated in the next couple of years, if it didn't find some solution to its funding problems, the organization would have to cut full-time staff and kind of shrivel away into not really being able to fulfill its obligations under the river management plan.
And then who was key in securing this funding? How did it finally come together?
Yeah, Kay was key in securing this funding.
Assemblymember Paula Kay.
Yeah. When she got into office, she was notified sort of by the UDC about the agreement between New York State and the UDC for New York State to provide them this funding. She said, they sent me a copy of it. I reviewed it and it looked legitimate to me, but it had never been enforced. And Kay then arranged a meeting with members of the UDC and Assemblymember Deborah Glick, who was the chair of the Environmental Conservation Committee. And it was sort of that meeting where the UDC was able to get pitched for that $100,000 that it had originally been promised. And that meeting and that sort of partnership that ended up getting that funding across the finish line and having it be something that ended up in the New York State budget.
And have there been discussions about how the $100,000 might be used?
Yeah, this was something that the UDC discussed at its June meeting, where it's not entirely sure right now how that funding can be used. It's something where the, you know, exact details of it are going to come down to the work with New York State. They mentioned, like, it's not going to be as simple as the state just cuts the $100,000 check and hands it over and doesn't track it after that. That is just something that they're going to continue to work with New York State about, the specific funding.
And is there an idea of, like, how much $100,000 goes for an organization of this size? I mean, it is unusual in sort of the governance structure with federal, state, and local governments all involved in managing the river corridor. And even if they don't know how it will be used, is it a fairly significant amount?
Yeah, I'd say it's a pretty hugely significant amount. I mean, the UDC is a size of organization where $100,000 is an incredibly significant amount of money, and which is why they've been pushing for it for all these years, and which is why sort of even with this $100,000, they're still going to be pushing on the Pennsylvania side to now try and get Pennsylvania to meet New York State and to also fulfill its promises and have this $100,000 share of the original funding that was promised.
I was going to ask, is there any news from Pennsylvania? What are folks saying about Pennsylvania's contribution?
No news from Pennsylvania yet. Just, you know, the organization has been trying to get that Pennsylvania funding over the years, the same way it's been trying to get this New York share of the funding over the years. And I think there's some hope that, you know, now that New York has acknowledged that, you know, this is something, this is a promise that went unfulfilled and should be fulfilled, I think there's some hope that that would encourage Pennsylvania to do the same, but there's no progress on that at this point to report.
Thank you to Tim Bruno and Leah Mayo for that update, and congrats to the team at the Upper Delaware Council. It's nice to be able to talk about some good news every now and then. Well, remember, Tim Bruno has more good news and great conversations for you every weekday morning at 10 on Radio Chatskill, and that program and this one are also available for you whenever you need them at WJFFradio.org. This program is The Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole, and it's time for an update on data centers in Pennsylvania. PA is weighing how aggressively it should court data center development as the state budget deadline approaches and as local residents in various parts of the Commonwealth increasingly raise concerns about data centers. Governor Josh Shapiro's administration has released a more detailed version of its proposed standards for data center projects and incentives for them to be a bit more environmentally friendly. Supporters say the proposal could bring construction jobs and economic investment while setting guardrails around energy and water use. Critics, however, worry the standards won't go far enough. Radio Catskill's Patricio Rabayo spoke to Kate Wong Poo of Spotlight PA to help explain the proposal and what it could mean for Pennsylvania.
So let's take a look at the big picture here. What is Governor Shapiro proposing when it comes to data centers, and why is this coming up now during the budget negotiations?
Yeah, so Governor Shapiro basically put out these standards that he wants data centers to meet. And if they meet these standards, then they get additional economic benefits. So they would get a tax break when purchasing computer servers. They would get to participate in these economic opportunity zones that the state has, and they would get sped up permitting. That's what he wants to happen. As it stands right now, those data centers already get the tax break and they already get to participate in these zone programs. So he wants to change the system so that it's not a given. They have to achieve these higher environmental transparency standards to be able to participate in those programs.
And what are those standards, right? He's calling it the Governor's Responsible Infrastructure Development Standards, which is they use the acronym GRID. So what do these developers have to do under these new standards?
Yeah, so it's broadly under a few categories. So there's energy, there's transparency, there's like workforce and economic development, and then there's environmental stuff. There's quite a lot of them, but broadly speaking, a lot of them focus on, you know, bringing your own energy to Pennsylvania, like constructing energy, using clean energy. So data centers, I think it says they have to use 32% of their energy has to come from clean sources by 2035, you know, creating construction jobs, paying at least $1.5 million worth of salaries every year, and then other sorts of environmental standards. And all of these things basically would be reported to the governor. And if they felt that the data centers met these standards, then they get, you know, GRID approval or a GRID certificate.
And one of the biggest pieces here is Pennsylvania's sales and use tax exemption for data centers. You mentioned that that's already in place, right?
Yeah, exactly. So we would need the state legislature to pass a bill to change the tax break as it currently exists. This comes off of, you know, in 2021, we had just changed this tax break to be uncapped. So that way data centers could claim as much money as they spent on computer servers. And so now it's a real reversal where Shapiro is proposing to not to cap it, but to make it harder to obtain.
And so I just want to understand this. For the data centers to obtain that, they would have to now meet the new standard. Is that correct?
Yes, that is okay. What Shapiro is proposing. Again, he does need legislative approval. We have a split legislature, you know, Democrats in the House, Republicans in the Senate. There's also no like legislation out right now that's proposing this. And so it's still a little up in the air. Like, we don't have it down in writing about how this program would be, how it would change. And, you know, Senate Republican leadership has previously said they're not sure if they're definitely going to act on data center stuff this budget season. They seem broadly open, but really haven't been super committal.
And do you know would this reflect current projects that are in development now or future projects? Or would like the current projects be grandfathered in or anything like that? Do you know?
I believe last time I checked, which was when these grid standards were announced, they said that it would only apply to projects going forward. So from my conversations when these standards were first announced, it wouldn't be for the projects that currently exist. But as I said, there's no legislation out right now with the grid projects, so things are definitely in flux.
Now, as far as like, you know, the big concerns that we hear from critics, from even on our side of the river, you know, data centers use a huge amount of electricity. Environmental groups have raised concern about water usage, air quality, and energy prices. Do these new proposals that the governor is proposing, does it answer those concerns, or do critics say that more regulation is needed?
I mean, I think both, right? Like, there are the governor's proposals requires that these data centers bring at least a third of their own energy, and that energy that they bring or build or buy, you know, however it may be, has to come from clean sources. It doesn't really specify too much what clean can mean. So like there could be some debate as to whether it's clean enough, whether it's enough energy that they're bringing. And I think I've definitely heard from environmental advocates that those are concerns. But there's also a group of environmental advocates, community advocates, people who are just saying, you know, we don't want data centers at all. And so what they would prefer to see is some sort of moratorium or pause on developing point blank, which, you know, this isn't.
And you mentioned that, you know, now that these tax incentives, you know, have been in place and now there's going to be new standards to be met before they are put into use. Has the business community sort of worry about that as far as that making the state less competitive for data centers to come into the state?
Yes, definitely. Yeah, the Chamber of Commerce, the Pennsylvania Chamber of Commerce, said that they were concerned about the changing of the tax benefits. The Data Center Coalition has also said that they were concerned about changing those tax benefits. And so they're definitely not in favor of that aspect of the plan, which I will say is sort of like the crux of the plan. That's the kicker of the plan. But I will say, like, in a previous email from the Shapiro admin to some of these data centers, they were saying that the grid requirements weren't intended to slow down data center development. They weren't intended to be restrictions. I think they said that it was going to be voluntary. And so it's sort of walking the line, right, of how can you actually get data centers to do what you want them to do in terms of being environmentally friendly, being energy friendly, sort of things like that, while also encouraging development and economic investment in these areas.
Now, your reporting notes about talks about criticism over communications between Governor Shapiro and administration and Amazon before these standards were released. How does Amazon play into all this?
Yeah, I mean, Amazon said they were going to invest $20 billion in Pennsylvania building data centers. I think there's currently two or three that are public and announced. They're up in NEPA mostly. And so they're a big spender. They were asked for their comments or their thoughts on the grid standards before they went public. I should note, you know, the Shapiro admin also asked other folks, or they said they asked other folks, like environmental advocates and I think like business advocates, labor advocates, not just Amazon and other data centers. But so they're a pretty big stakeholder in that there's a lot of money that they'll be spending in Pennsylvania.
So it seems like I guess they wanted to see if they could sort of meet the standards, or I guess I don't know what those Amazon. Well, do you know what Amazon was looking for in these standards? Or
no, we don't have those emails specifically. I think you know, from talking to the Data Center Coalition, which is a trade organization for a lot of these data centers, including Amazon Web Services, I think Microsoft as well. Their argument is basically that data centers are being traded unfairly. You know, like there aren't other kinds of developers or businesses that are getting the same level of restrictions placed upon them. And so their concern, I think they're trying to walk the line of, oh, we're okay with restrictions, but so far in terms of the ones listed in grid, they're not big fans of the ones that the governor has proposed.
Now, with the June 30th budget deadline is approaching, is this likely to be, you think this be settled before, as part of the budget before that, or could this be a debate that continues beyond the deadline?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to say, right? Like, you never really know what's going to be thrown into budget negotiations. I know that generally speaking, folks here are trying to not have it go on as long as it did last year. And so there's definitely consensus both in both chambers and on both sides of the aisle that there should be some form of regulation. But in terms of whether or not that consensus is enough to push anything over the finish line, it's sort of to be seen. And, you know, Senator Pittman, the Senate Majority Leader, previously told me that he's sort of not sure that any of the bills or legislation that's been introduced thus far is going to be super helpful at this point. So he doesn't seem super open at this moment to passing any sort of data center regulation bills. But that being said, June's a long month, so we'll have to see.
Yeah, definitely. Are you hearing any concerns from communities where these data centers are being proposed? I know we've reported in the past with Spotlight PA about some of these data centers and sort of the pushback from the community. Just curious what you have heard.
Yeah, definitely. I've talked to a lot of folks who are very concerned, both for affordability reasons. They're worried about their energy prices going up. They're worried about their water, like their wells running dry. You know, there are some communities that still use wells to get all their waters. And I've talked to some folks who are really concerned that that'll dry up. They're concerned about their property value. I've also talked to folks who are just, they really like the area in which they live. They don't want a huge sprawling campus to sort of detract from the natural, like, rural beauty of Pennsylvania. And so it sort of runs the gamut as to why people are concerned, but there are a lot of people who are concerned for sure.
Now, I'm just curious, and I'm not sure if you know the answer to this yet, but what happens if a data center receives benefits, but later, like, fails to meet the standards?
Yeah, the proposal doesn't lay out specifically how the process will work, but it does say that these data centers have to apply annually to get grid approval. It's unclear as to, like, who would be in charge, whether it's the Office of Transformation and Opportunity, the Department of Revenue, that they're in charge of certifying these data centers, but it's unsure as to who's going to be, like, enforcing compliance.
Yeah. Does Pennsylvania have IDAs, you know, industrial development agencies, like we have here in New York?
I think the closest thing that we would have would be either the Office of Transformation and Opportunity, which is a new thing under Governor Shapiro, or the Department of Community and Economic Development, where those are the two agencies that are really in charge of trying to, like, foster business growth in the state. And so I think those seem to be the two most similar.
Right, yeah, because here in New York, usually the IDA are the ones who are, like, lack of a better word, governing the tax breaks for these businesses. So, Kate, anything else that we have not discussed you want folks to know about?
No, I think that's everything.
We're talking to Kate Hung-Poo of Spotlight PA discussing Governor Josh Shapiro's proposed data center standards and how the issue could factor into Pennsylvania's budget negotiations. So, Kate, thank you so much for doing this. I do really appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for having me.
In Liberty, I'm Patricio Roballo for Radio Catskill.
Thank you, Patricio. We've got more news on the way as we meet Sullivan County's latest poet laureate. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
If Plattner wins, you are going to see a lot of the more progressive Democrats who have rallied to him say, this is the path forward. We need more candidates who are speaking out boldly on Medicare for All, on confronting the oligarchy, on taking a much harder line toward Israel, for example.
I'm Natalie Kitroev. That's Today on the Daily from the New York Times.
It is the Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole. Sullivan County has a new poet laureate. Kim Tai is succeeding Kevin Scott Graham, and she will serve until 2028. Tai is a writer, journalist, and poet whose work has appeared in the Associated Press, Fortune, USA Today, MTV, and the Discovery Channel. She hopes to use the role to build community through poetry and open mic events across the country. Radio Catskill's Olivia Sipple recently spoke with Kim Tai.
Could you tell me some of your goals you want to achieve in Sullivan County as the Poet Laureate?
Yeah, absolutely. So I feel really honored, and it's a great privilege to be Poet Laureate for these next 2 years. And for me, writing and poetry has always been a really great source of healing and empowerment for myself and my own journey. And I'd love to bring that essence and that aspect to the county itself. I think it's very easy for poetry to be alienating and for folks to feel like, oh, well, I'm not a poet, or I'm not into that kind of thing. But I really think poetry is just another mechanism for us to express ourselves and to connect with each other. And that's one of my main goals, is for us to just more deeply understand ourselves and each other through this medium, whether it's kids or families or adults themselves.
One of your focuses is highlighting voices that are left unheard. How did your own identity throughout your life inspire you to want to uplift other voices?
Yeah, so I grew up in a predominantly white neighborhood in Texas. And as a queer Asian woman, I often was the only person, right, capital O, in the room. And so I think consciously and subconsciously knew that I didn't always have that space or to necessarily speak up or that confidence. And so one of the ways that I did that throughout my whole career was through my work as a journalist and reporter, and just making sure that everyone got a voice and everyone who wanted to tell a story could tell a story, because access can be such a huge issue. And so that's, to me, one of the big things that I'd love to bring to the county, that no matter what your background, that, you know, everyone has a story to tell. And so it's just about getting in the right space with the right people and making sure that you yourself feel like you have a story that is worth telling. And I think that's the real work.
Well, perfect transition into my next question. You are an Emmy Award-winning journalist with work in AP Fortune and MTV, just to name a few. So how does your journalism background translate now into your poetry work?
Yeah, to me, I think that storytelling in all forms is just like how we can rewrite narratives for ourselves and each other. And so I think journalism is a way of uplifting voices outside of yourself and making sure that all perspectives are being shown, even if you disagree with them. I think it's important to have a wide range of voices out there. And to me, poetry does something very similar. It shows different ways at how people see the world. I think that's what makes poetry so beautiful in that way, is that you have to be able to really stop and look at the world and stop long enough to say something about it. And everybody's going to see something different in the world than another person. And so that, to me, is worth telling no matter what you've experienced or who you, you know, might be or what background you have.
So we have been talking a lot about hearing other people's voices. And in the Buddhist tradition that you're currently studying, it also focuses on that same philosophy to speak and be heard. So how has your studying of this tradition helped you throughout your poetry journey into landing your position now?
Wow, what a great question, Olivia. You did your homework. I appreciate that. Yeah, so I think in the Plum Village tradition, which is the Buddhist tradition that I practice in, it's very much about mindful speech and deep listening. And so much of that practice is so hard in our day-to-day, right? It's so easy for us to just say whatever's on our mind or to not listen or pay attention. You know, we have such a short attention spans now because of social media and the internet, and there's a real economy behind that. And so it's a real practice now as humans to be human. And I think part of that is being able to just stop and listen to your peers, which I think is also part of poetry, is also stopping and listening to the people around you. and then being able to really think through what you want to say and being able to share it more widely in a way that feels compassionate to yourself and to other folks.
Well, if someone was just going to break into reading poetry for the first time, what are some of your recommendations?
Oh, man. I think for me personally, especially if you're a Sullivan County resident, I think Mary Oliver is a great entry point. I think anyone here in Sullivan County has some appreciation of nature, whether it's kind of, I don't want to make the assumption, but there's a lot of beautiful nature around, and I think a lot of people can appreciate it. And so I think being able to experience a poet like Mary Oliver, who really kind of bathes and in the sort of gratitude of what Mother Nature provides, is a really beautiful entry point. And she's so accessible, you know, and I think she's a real example of contemporary poetry where not everything has to rhyme, not everything has to like be a certain, you know, iambic pentameter the way that Shakespeare was. It was just her observations of the world. And to me, that's the type of poetry I connect with the most personally.
Do you have a favorite space in Sullivan County where you go to unwind after a long day?
Oh man, that's such a great question. Well, I'm lucky enough that where I am is right up against the Willowemoc. So I like to walk over there and just really enjoy and watch the water, especially seasonally when we're switching from winter into the sort of mud season when like all the ice is like melting and rushing down. I also personally really love Neversink. I think that lake there is like so incredible. And I think any sort of nature that helps me take a really deep breath that makes me realize that my problems are so minuscule in the grand scheme of things really helps me kind of get outside of my sort of everyday thoughts and everyday challenges.
We are very lucky in the sense where we have so much access to beautiful nature and surroundings. And just to round out the interview, what are you most excited about to be in your new position as Poet Laureate?
To be honest, I'm really excited to meet folks. You know, I you know, my wife and I moved here about 5 years ago. And so Sullivan County is still rather new to us, although I will say we're very lucky and grateful to have the community we already do. And at the same time, I don't know everybody, right? And so I'm excited to see who wants to come out and connect and explore and play with this art form and just like, you know, really think of it as a space more to come together as community members versus it being a writing class. And that's really kind of my approach and hope everybody comes in with that in mind. So I think the long and short, the TLDR, is that I'm excited to make new friends in the next 2 years.
Well, big thanks to Olivia Sipple for that interview. And, well, thank you for being here with me for the Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole, and this program is now over. Coming up at 7, we got Mr. Kusar Grace with 2 hours of great music for you, followed by David Christian with Connect the Dots and another hour of great music at 9 o'clock. But before any of that, we got The Daily up next. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.
Support comes from Sullivan 180. Building healthy communities through people, places, and policy, one degree at a time. More information at Sullivan180.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
I'm Jason Tuga, host of The Mixtape. I play classics you love, deep cuts, and brand new music. Friday nights at 7, only on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.